I'll have a copy of it for you guys.
Call the meeting of the Energy Finance and Policy Division to order. Clerk will take the roll. And the first order of business, and incidentally a quorum is present. First order of business would be the approval of the minutes from the last meeting. Representative Slocum, if you would be so kind, just to make that motion.
I would be so kind, and we approve the minutes.
We have the motion before us. Are there any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Minutes are approved. Members, the first item that we have on the agenda for today is House File 1392, which is my bill that we heard last week, or maybe it was the week before, the hydrogen bill. The chairman of the Ways and Means Committee has asked us to wanted to take a look at that in Ways and Means, but it's still my intention to include that in some form in the omnibus finance bill. So I don't think there's any necessity for debate today. I just want to make the motion to move it out of here, if that's acceptable. And I have talked to members about that. So with that, members, I would move that House File 1392 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance with a recommended re-referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion to that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Peterson, House File 2253.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today is House File 2253. I'd like to move that bill in front of the committee.
I think the motion, Representative Peterson, would be the recommendation to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance with the recommendation that it be placed on the general register.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. You should have a delete everything number one, a DE1 amendment in your packets today.
Would you like to move that amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'd like to move the DE1 amendment, place it in front of the committee.
Obviously, to get the bill in the order, the author wishes it to be heard. Any discussion to the amendment? All those in favor of its adoption signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know this is has been a busy couple weeks for members on committees, and we're into the evening and to the nighttime. I'm sure other members have to be in committees this evening, I'm assuming. So if when we get into the testimony, I'd like it such that if feasible, we could be done by about 4 o'clock. And the chair is nodding his head, so take
Representative
that.
Peterson, the only item on the agenda for today is your bill, and if we finish it up this afternoon, there would be no reason to have a meeting this evening.
Thank you. So we should vote now, then. No, I'm just kidding.
Representative Osmond. Mr. Chair, I just think it should be noted that threats could do everything. So.
Okay. And with that, Mr. Chair and members, community-based energy development, now referred to after this as CBED, was developed in 2005 by many members of this committee, including the chair and Representative Westrum, Representative Gunther, and came out of, I believe it's correct to say, Southwest Minnesota, and in 2005 it applied only to wind power development. But this year I've decided to change that and make it eligible for all renewable energy technologies under the renewable energy standard that we've passed earlier this session. There are 14 sections of the bill, and I'll go through some of them. Section 2, definitions, CBED qualifying owner means a Minnesota resident, an LLC with members who are Minnesota residents, Minnesota nonprofit, Minnesota co-op association, including a rural co-op, cooperative association, and generation and transmission co-op, at the request of the member distribution utility. That's important to note. Political subdivision, local government, municipal electric utility, municipal power agency, on behalf and request of that member distribution utility. County, charter city, town, school district, public or private higher education institute, local or regional government, and or a board, commission, association, and a tribal council. Working down the page, 2, 221 to 235, this is new language, and the CBED we're proposing here that will provide at least 51% of the total payments made as a direct result of the power purchase agreement or similar agreement with the utility. So if 51%, in a easy way to describe it, would be going to the members of the community who are defined in subdivision 2. And there's more language there as well, which I'm assuming we get into. Tariff rate. In 2005, there had been established a net present value tariff rate of 2.7 cents per kilowatt hour. We've removed that. And what it says is that what is still existing is that you should provide, it must provide, a rate higher in the first 10 years than in the last 10 years of your power purchase agreement. Going on to subdivision 4, utilities to offer the tariff, updating that by December 1, 2007. Priority for CBED Project Subdivision 5, Line 3.25, under the Good Faith Objective, the REO that ends in 2010, and then under the Renewable Energy Standard that starts in 2010, the utility now, instead of should take reasonable steps, they must take reasonable steps to determine if one or more CBED projects are available that meet the utility's cost and reliability requirements, which we've talked about at length in other hearings that we've had. And on the bottom of page 3, basically, 3.3 run, the utility must negotiate in good faith with developers of CBED projects that meet the specifications and so forth. 4.7, municipal power agency or G&T co-op, this is new language, must, when issuing a request for CBED proposals to satisfy the RES, provide notice to its member distribution utilities that they may propose in partnership with other qualifying owners a CBED project for the consideration of the municipal power agency or generation and transmission co-op. So it gets it down a little bit more to the distribution co-op level. We're encouraging energy partnerships in subdivision 8 on page 5. The power producer may, independent power producer may participate in a CBED project as an owner, equity partner, technical financial assistance, subject to the limits of the definition. And subdivision 9, CBED advisory determination. The Commissioner of Commerce will be issuing advisory determinations as to whether the proposed project qualifies as a CBED under this section. Utilities are interested in owning. Further down in subdivision 2A, 514, utility need to construct, own, and operate generation facilities through the standard. And there's language here, proposed, you know, in 522, a proposed schedule for purchasing renewable energy from CBED projects. And then we get into 532, the commission must approve a plan unless it determines. 534 imposes excessive costs on ratepayers. And then on page 6 at the top, for those who watch the PUC, that does not reasonably allocate resources among utility-owned generation, CBED, non-CBED, and competitive selection process. So it will be incumbent upon those interested in this sector of the economy to pay attention to the PUC proceedings as the utilities go in front of them to propose how they are going to meet what will eventually be an energy standard in the state of Minnesota. Similar to other requests and such, utilities are cost recovery, like for MRP and other type of things that have been done in the state of Minnesota. On page 7, section 5, curtailment payments. Maybe not everybody knows what that is, but that is a phenomenon such that sometimes the energy is being produced, but it's not being delivered, but somebody's still getting paid for energy that's not being delivered, and we're just making it such that we're going to look into that and make sure there's no discrimination. Community-based energy development green pricing option. Rather than have green pricing expire in 2010, we're going to keep it going, and the utility shall advertise quarterly that there's a seabed green pricing op program available, and basically you're going to be able to satisfy or get 100% of your power from seabed projects or credits purchased from seabed projects. And if you want to, you're going to be able to, similar to the Department of Agriculture's Minnesota Grown logo, would be able to, if approved by the Commissioner of Commerce, be able to affix a standardized 100% Minnesota renewable energy label or logo to your product, similar to Minnesota Grown. If you remember, maybe this, people don't maybe think this is a big deal, but in E85, there's the blue and yellow logo, which some recognize, but then there's also the display of just the standard E85, you know, saying on the gas pump, and, you know, it didn't get standardized, and there's some marketing, you know, missed opportunity there, if you will. Section 7, Reliability Administrator, that's the person who did the wind integration study. We're going to move that job to the Department of Commerce. And at the bottom of page 9, this administrator, new language, must demonstrate technical training, expertise, or experience in energy reliability issues. That's a way of saying that a former member who maybe lost their election and needs a job can't have a job unless they know what they're talking about. That's what that is intended to state. Skipping to page 11, size determination. This is you know, dealing with nameplate capacity and location of these projects. This is maybe specifically for wind. And then section 9, assumption by counties to permit projects less than 25 megawatts. And then section 10, page 13, a statewide study of dispersed generation potential. We heard testimony earlier this session about transmission needs across the state of Minnesota, and this is formalizing some of those studies that have been started, determining in the five transmission zones across Minnesota where there might be available spots, sweet spots, if you will, in Minnesota. And the first phase will consider a total of 600 megawatts of new dispersed generation, which is defined now between 10 and 40 megawatts, generally accepted year 2010 transmission system. And it goes on to say who's involved and what they're going to do, a technical review committee, of course. And the Commissioner of Commerce must submit a report with findings and recommendation by June 15, 2008. The second phase of the study is a report of an additional 600 megawatts of dispersed generation projects among the five transmission planning zones and such. The technical review committee, between 10 and 15 individuals with expertise in electric transmission system. You know, we can probably guess who's going to want to be involved with that. And meetings. Meetings not necessarily in one location, but spread out in each electricity transmission planning zone, which of there are five. Now, section 11 deals with leases and easements, which in the state of Minnesota, I don't believe we have a policy on that since it's new language, but the Dakotas do. This is basically saying that if somebody gets an easement or a lease on Well, for instance, since seabed's only applied to wind in the past for wind, if there's no action on that within 5 years, it is terminated. Section 12 transfers the reliability administrator to commerce officially, and then Section 13 of transmission authority and interconnection evaluations. We're going to look and see what other states have undergone, specifically Kansas, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wyoming, to consult with stakeholders, review the powers and duties for constructing, owning, maintaining, and operating transmission facilities of state transmission authorities, which these other states have established. There's a lot of talk about transmission and between the sweet spot study, if you will, and some of this transmission authority and interconnection evaluations, we should be able to get a better grip on what type of transmission, how much is needed, where is needed, and the like. And that is a quick overview. There's probably going to be, I anticipate, discussion about ownership percentages, financing, tax credit use, money flowing to communities, partnership, the level of payment on the gross amounts over power purchase agreement length and the like. And I will just now call on Assistant Commissioner Bull to spend maybe a little bit more time on some of the details, and then we'll go through the list and take questions as the chair so desires.
Thank you. Mr. Bull, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, thank you. For the record, I'm Mike Bull, Assistant Commissioner for Renewable Energy at the Minnesota Department of Commerce. And I do want to thank Representative Peterson and a lot of the stakeholders. The product that you see here before you has been, you know, this has been the year of work groups. We've been having these stakeholder work groups and working through issues. And a lot of what you see here is the product of that process, and I think we'll continue to have some conversations about some pieces of it. But I think will move the ball forward in a lot of ways for community energy. This was an article in the governor's Next Generation Energy Initiative. A lot of those pieces that we proposed are present in President Peterson's bill, and we really appreciate that. What we see is seabed community ownership of energy production has wind energy and other electrical has the same sort of benefits, I think, to rural economies and our farm communities as the farmer-owned cooperative ethanol plants have had over the past number of years to stabilize those economies and allow folks to stay home. And we want to be able to see these same sorts of benefits through electrical production, such as wind energy and biomass projects, etc. One thing to know is when the bill passed in 2005, creating seabed, we were told during the midst of that 2005 legislative session, Representative Westrom might remember this, I'm sure Representative Magnus does, and I'm sure that President Peterson does as well, that we were told from the folks at Suzlon, wind manufacturing, turbine manufacturing facilities, that if we passed this bill, they would come to Pipestone, build their blade manufacturing plant. And they did that. You guys passed the bill, the governor signed it, and then they came and built their manufacturing facility. What we're feeling now, we're hearing a lot from a bunch of wind turbine manufacturing companies who are coming to Minnesota, or at least interested in coming to Minnesota, primarily, I think, as a result of the RES that you've passed, but a number of those manufacturers are actually looking to serve the community-based energy development niche. One of the important things about the RES and about the policies that we have in Minnesota is a focus, the focus that we have, which is unparalleled in the rest of the country with regard to community energy. And so I do want to recommend the passage of this bill to you, and again, thank everyone for their good work. And I've worked on a lot of this language, so I'm available to answer questions that members might have.
Are there questions for Mr. Bull at this time? Representative Magnus.
I have a question, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure it's for Mr. Bull or for Representative Peterson, but on page 2, lines 2.28, 2.29, 2.30, the language of 2.29's got me confused. It said consisting of more than one or two turbines. What could you explain that,
Magnus? I think.
And the delete all? Are we working off of the delete all?
The delete all.
Oh, I'm working on it. Oh, okay. And I threw the wrong one away and pulled it out. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, and then it's Representative Magnus, I believe.
Okay.
2829230 in the delete all refers. Are you talking about the lenders or you want to go up to the 15% more than two turbines? Which part?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I see now in the delete all that's taken care of because I couldn't figure that out. More than two turbines, okay.
Thanks. Any other questions? Seeing none, I'm sure Mr. Bull will be available if questions arise later. And next on the agenda we have Mr. Crocker. Mr. Crocker, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, my name is George Crocker. I'm the Executive Director of the North American Water Office, and I'm on the Seabed Steering Committee. And it is a real pleasure to be here recommending this bill for passage today. A lot of people worked really hard to get it to this point. There are multiple very different interests that had to come together to do this. But what this bill really represents is the beginning of the toolkit that we really need in order to make good on the commitments we're making for renewable energy, to make good on the commitments we have to enhance local economic development. In your packet, you will see a article written by Dr. Kildegard from the University of Minnesota Morris, who talks about that local economic benefit that happens when the renewable energy commitments we are making are fulfilled by Minnesota-based economic development. And it's really that local commitment that Commissioner Bull talked about that will enable the people who live in this state to buy into the commitments we're making for renewable energy, that will allow enough of that kind of development to happen in time to make a difference from an environmental perspective. And considering how important that aspect of it is, to get this kind of a toolkit put together is a tremendous accomplishment. It's all important from my perspective. Why two of the major things to get through here are to make sure projects are economically viable. Dealing with the tariff rate does that. So that means that projects will be able to have a cash flow that works. And the second major question is, where are we going to put these projects? And the so-called sweet spot study Representative Peterson described in terms of doing that analysis of our transmission system enables us to understand where those opportunities are. Those opportunities are not by definition, but by nature, decentralized and dispersed. By nature, they're community-based projects, which means that as we move forward, now for the next 5 and 6 years, the community-based opportunity is the opportunity that we can take immediate advantage of. And as we do that, that means that the community-based entities get to exercise their muscles. They get to find out who they are. They get to learn how to participate in the proceedings that Representative Peterson talked about as we decide how much are the utilities going to own, how much are independent producers going to own, and how much is going to be CBED. That's an ongoing thing. It's not like a carve-out. You get to do this much in an arbitrary sense. It's a process that we will manage to enable the seabed part of that to meet its optimum, to reach its optimum level. And that is how it should be. That's the right way to do it. This is a good bill. I'd be glad to have to talk forever about it, certainly to answer any questions you may have about it. But this is a very good bill, and I'm very pleased to have been part of bringing it forward.
Thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Crocker?
Mr.
Representative Westman.
I'm not positive Mr. Cock is the right one to answer this, but I'm trying to glean through this amendment as we listen to the testimony. Early on, we in the definitions of an LLC, we strike laws of the state of Minnesota and specifically cite statute 322B. Any reason for that? Maybe Representative Peterson knows that. Is that have the same net effect, or does that open it up to more people who are corporations or others that might not be located in the state to own that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Westrom. What page and through? Where are you?
Page right. One, Representative.
Page one, okay.
Under the definition.
1.17, 1.18. Mr. Bull?
Mr. Chair, again, I'm Mike Bull. Representative Westrom, we actually are proposing to tighten that language up. Currently, it's under the law that an LLC is organized under the laws of the state. Chapter 22 is the specific chapter that handles those LLC issues, and we wanted to make it clear that it's within the confines of that statute that you would create an LLC.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Bull,
Representative Westrom.
We still have the requirement of a Minnesota resident, mm-hmm. but an LLC doesn't have to have a resident, but I assume that would be an overriding condition of this definition.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, that's correct.
Right.
The clause that follows that up, it says the LLC must be made up of members who are Minnesota residents.
Sure. Thanks.
Thank you.
Other questions for Mr. Crocker, Mr. Bull? Seeing none, I believe the next two testifiers are en route but not yet here, so we will skip to Mr. Alsop. Maybe later.
Go ahead. Mr. Chairman, I am Dennis Foltz, a farmer from southwest Minnesota, Tracy. I farm with my father and two brothers at a hog and cropping operation. And also we became involved in putting together a community win project. I can say that I'm an amateur testifier. My past experience with changing legislation was back in the early 90s when a group of us pork producers got involved in the legislative process to allow us as pork producers to work together. The way the current law had read at that time, you could only have four people involved in some type of an LLC, and it precluded the average and the small pork producer from becoming involved. Through our efforts, we were able to expand it so now local people can work together and pool their resources and become efficient. 15 years later, since that process started, we now have a strong, vibrant pork production industry in Minnesota, and it's composed basically of independent producers of the moderate and small size. So I felt that was a success. I come to you today looking at the seedbed legislation, in the role that about 4 years ago, my father and three other neighbors decided that we should get involved in the wind process, put a couple wind towers up on our own farm. Then we realized, you know, if we go to the neighbors in a, say, 15-20 section area where we feel there's wind potential, we can put together a larger project, find economies of scale, and then it would be large enough blocks that the utilities would have an interest in us, and we could probably put together some pretty competitive pricing for the utilities to consider. The first project area that we identified there, we now have about a 20-section area that is in our footprint. And currently we have 180 megawatts of power in the MISO queue that with interconnection very closely, we're just about done. 50 megawatts are completed, and we have another 30 that's very, very close. This is a large project, and is moving along very well. Once we saw this, that this first project could work, working with the landowners, I should say, in the first project now, it's about 20 sections, 25 sections maybe. We have approximately, of the landowners in that area, 80% of the land owners are currently members and investors, unit holders in our company. So there's a lot of excitement in that area, and it's going very well. We currently are developing another area, just only about 10, 12 miles from my home, area and land that I happen to have some land in that footprint. And we've got a lot of excitement going there, and that's growing very well, too. We are a little bit larger. The size of a project is a little bit larger than some of the, quote, seabed projects that many of you were thinking about. And in some cases, we have opportunities that financing possibilities, this type of thing, that might be a little bit different than the smaller projects. So in some respects, we're kind of a tweener. We're a locally owned, locally controlled company that... But yet we're the larger scale and have some different financing alternatives. So with that, I will turn it over to Jay Alsup. He is our CFO of our company, Outland Renewable Energy, and he can go into some of the other things that we're concerned about in this bill. I can say that we're supportive of the bill as it stands now. There's some things we'd like to possibly work through in the next couple weeks with the stakeholders, but we're not here to rock the boat. So I'll turn it over to Jay Alsup.
Thank you, Mr. Alsup. Mr. Chair and Representative Peterson. I'm Jay Alsup. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of Outland Renewable Energy, which is the parent organization, but I also serve as Chief Financial Officer of Summit Wind LLC, which is the direct project entity that Mr. Pulse was talking about. It is developing 180 megawatts right now outside of Wyndham, as well as Chief Financial Officer of Chetek Wind LLC, which is another project company that we have up in Lyon and Marie County right now that is currently signed up for interconnection of 150 megawatts, but could go as high as 300 or 400 megawatts right now in overall size. In addition to that, Outland Renewable Energy at this point was formed and continues to be a Minnesota-based company. We have the privilege right now of actually opening up a new office right now in our field office that will be located in Canby, Minnesota. It will be fully operational between April 1st and May 1st of this year. And we'll have we'll start off with about 20 individuals that will be based out of that office, and we're hoping that we'll move to 125 individuals over the next 2 to 3 years. And as Representative Peterson noted that we're looking at some of the aspects of the bill. Overall, we support the intent of the bill. And right now, we are just looking at some other changes. We feel that as a Minnesota-based company, that we contribute significantly to the local economy. Some of those changes would be like, for example, putting the O&M cost right now for a wind park or facility within the constructs of the numerator. I think you talked about the numerator and denominators, because we feel that that brings back a lot of jobs, it brings back a lot of economic benefit and development into, right now, the local community. In addition, I just want to note that Outland is also associated with affiliated or sister companies that are involved with what's called an area called New Market Tax Credits, and that is really a subsidy program designed to help out communities that have seen economic flight or a reduction of a number of citizens over the years. And there's a number of communities in that part of Minnesota which has seen the economic flight as much as a reduction of 10 to 20% over the last 10 years. And really, we stand as Outland to try to do whatever is possible right now to provide those new market tax credits to help out those communities right now in the wind area right now with supporting it, whether it's wind projects, housing projects, etc. We really take a strong approach right now to the overall wind aspect and we also want to make sure that we're good corporate citizens within the areas that we are actually involved with. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for these witnesses, Representative Gunther?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the last testifier. Could you tell me, do the farmers own these windmills?
Well, right now we have a group right now, a LLC, that is made up of an ownership structure that is principally made up of farmers, yes. So we have right now, what we offer is an investment of anywhere from $10,000 to $30,000 for an individual to come in and get involved with a project, and that gives them a direct ownership in the seabed environment. And right now, in our summit project right now, we have over 40 farmers. And in our Shetek project, we have over 30 farmers that are direct owners of the LLC that are involved in that.
Representative Gunther.
So they own it, and they have the responsibility for payment of those windmills.
Now, the...
Esther also.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Representative Gunther, we right now are... we actually have the payments are financed by outside lending sources right now. So what we do is we have the farmers are involved in the development process up through the construction process right now with the funding. At that point, we bring in outside lending sources at this stage, both a debt lender and a equity lender. And I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with the overall process, but I think you've probably heard about the FLIP process quite regularly. So what we do is we bring in a tax equity lender that utilizes the PTC credit at this point under the U.S. laws, who is a principal owner for the initial 10-year period.
Representative Gunther.
I'm trying to get away, figure out how I should answer this. When the payment is finished, the farmers who land the windmills are on will own those windmills, have title of those windmills.
Now the project.
That's fair also.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman Hilke and Representative Gunther, no, the project LLC will continue to own for the life of that project. And what happens is in all of our projects today, we have a group of Board of Governors right now, and the majority of those Board of Governors make up the LLC. And so they control the decision-making process at this point of the project LLC after the PTC investor has left.
Representative Gunther.
So during the process that we have to pay for those windmills and during the life of those windmills, what are the payments based on for the members with the LLC and have the windmills on their property?
Esther Olson.
Chairman Hilke and Representative Gunther, the payments right now, we actually have what's called an LLC payment that are actually made to the owner's investors, and that LLC payment represents, on average, 7% to 12% of their original invested dollars for the farmers. So we allow them some return on their original investment as over the life of that. And because of the amount of investment the farmers have relative to the size of the project, towards the end of the life of the project, the returns come back to the farmers anywhere from 50 to 75% of their original investment is returned to the farmers each year in the tailing years of the project right now through the PPA period. At the end of the PPA period, what will end up happening is the farmer, the Board of Governors will then decide who will then go in and who will the next PPA provider be for that region so they control their own destiny for that region.
Thank you.
Further questions, Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I have a couple of questions. In your organization here, have you had any problems getting a power purchase agreement as we've gone? If we negotiate, some of the folks I've talked to back at home are having some problems with that. They're hearing that some of the utilities are able to buy the power certainly a lot cheaper from some of the overseas companies that are building them or other areas. And have you had any problem with that? And my second question would be, how are you having other problems financing it? How do you go through the financing? Obviously, you can't do local banks. They're limited on how they
how much they can finance this, but maybe we'll talk just a little bit more about that.
Sure.
Good. We get an understanding in the committee.
Chairman Hill, State Representative Magnus. What we actually have, we've done a couple of projects right now, and typically within any of the projects, we go through what's called, we go through the RFP process for the utilities, and one of the things that we have found through that process is by being a little bit larger in our overall project size between 50 megawatts and 120 megawatts in overall size, we have the ability to basically create a lower cost structure right now for the projects, and as a result, we have been competitive in our bidding right now for the PPAs with what we're trying to do. One of the things that we look at is basically, and why we're going with maybe a larger platform overall than we've seen with some of the other things in the community wind, is that we can, through that larger platform, utilize the economies of scale right now, utilize better tax equity investors and some larger banks who will bring about the overall reduction of the overall cost of capital. And one of our focus right now in what we're trying to do on an ongoing basis to look at tweaking some of the aspects of the bill and working with the stakeholder group is our focus is to bring down the cost of capital as much as possible by looking at the larger projects, aggregating those projects right now, and with that reduction of cost of capital right now, provide and be competitive so that we can balance what the utilities' needs are right now in terms of the rate base with a good, favorable economics for the project so that it balances all the constituent groups at this table.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Magnus.
How about transmission lines? What's your experience been with that? Are you able to access the transmission capability, and how's your relationship been getting the agreements with the MISO? Come on.
Representative Magnus, what we've had done is right now, the MISO process is pretty much set up right now. And so what you end up doing is putting your position in the queue, and then based on a number of factors right now in terms of where the infrastructure and the deliverability, you kind of work through the queue. In addition, what we've tried to do is we have the ability to employ outside consultants in many cases that have a significant amount of expertise, in some cases with Xcel and other energy companies, that understand and know the queue and have been able to get assist MISO in looking at the process right now to look at it. In the case of the Summit Wind LLC, we were far enough off the ridge at this stage that we've been able to address the deliverability aspects of the different situations. However, as we're looking at our Chetek project right now, we're a little farther north and a little closer to the ridge, and so we have not been able to secure an active PPA at this point because of the whole problem with building the infrastructure and the amount of destruction that is on the ridge. However, we're comfortable over as we address some of the other transmission issues on a global basis that the transmission will be built up and provide an ability to exit the ridge right now to go ahead and do that. But we found that the MISO process has a tendency in some cases to be locally oriented. It will cover the first 50 to 100 mile area. But where the MISO process has had a couple issues is looking at the long term, a global perspective of actually how to get that power all the way to the major metropolitan areas. And so that's what we've tried to employ and look at bringing some of the outside consultants on board to do that. One of the aspects that we're looking for is by extending or increasing the Chetek footprint significantly over where we're at, maybe putting in multiple a MISO request for extension of the megawatts is by getting a larger project, then we can also have the ability to build out and control a little bit more of the infrastructure, if you will, towards helping build the private lines necessary to help the deliverability problems right now, and then helping the whole transmission structure problem right now. But we're excited in some aspects about the SWEET study because I think it will have a tendency to some extent, to really broaden the understanding of where MISO will of the region and some of the constraints we've got with that.
Just one final question, Mr. Chairman.
Magnus.
How about your relationship with the counties? Are you seeing the county commissioners and organizations, are they willing to move forward with projects like yours, or are you seeing any hurdles we've got to look at? Because part of what we're trying to do here, we've had testimony earlier, Mr. Chairman, about this, is trying to widely disperse more of this wind, and we've got it in the Buffalo Ridge area, and you folks have been part of it. But as we looked at other counties that are trying to do this, do you think we need any other language in the seabed bill here to work with that, or is that not a problem?
Mr. Foles?
Chairman Hilty, Representative Magnus. We have been pretty much focused totally on just our immediate two or three counties. So I really don't have a feeling on that.
Chairman Hilty, Representative Magnus.
Mr. Alsop.
I think that right now we have, you know, as we said, we've looked at the Buffalo Ridge area, some of the areas off of that, and we have, as a company, concentrated on, if you will, the higher wind regime areas. And as a result of that concentration, we found that the counties have been extremely receptive in the marketplace for those higher regime areas. But we don't have an experience that some of the larger developers have done, say, for example, on the 35W corridor or back around the Abbott Lee area, which is a little lower wind regimes.
Mr. Chairman, the reason I ask that is because of some of the discussions I've had with some counties, not a uniform way of assessing a building permit on this and the fees they're doing with that and that sort of thing, and I just wondered if you'd had any experiences with that. Because I know that in some of the counties they're varying greatly on the amount of money they're charging for a building permit for a turbine.
Further questions for these witnesses? Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, to the witness, just examining a little more on the ownership structure. First of all, and I missed your early opening testimony, I assume you're in favor of this bill? Does your organization or your company and the way you've structured some of your projects fit under the seabed as you see it?
Mr. Chairman, I'll see Representative Westrup. Right now, we are in favor with the intent of the bill. The big defining factor right now is the 51% of what is deemed to be the qualifying expenditures right now for the expenditure for the qualified owners. We see that because of the size of our projects right now, compared to the investment size, that we're looking for a little bit of a broader definition associated with the 51% inclusion of a couple more categories, as I stated earlier on the operations and maintenance side of those categories. So those are some of the pieces that we're looking for to kind of broaden the bill. And we believe under the current definitions of seabed that we qualify today under the current bill.
So, Mr. Chair, so if I understand your ownership structure, it's primarily landowners that host turbines, and they own the LLC that owns the turbines as well. Did I understand that right?
Mr. Foles?
Chairman Hilty, Representative Westrom. When we identified that specific footprint that we thought had the best potential, we told the people in that, landowners in that footprint, that the major benefit of being an investor is going to come through the profits generated by the company. And where the turbines are located would be determined strictly by the engineers that could give us the best output of wind from that area. So where the turbines got located was not really material other than, but if you did happen to get a turbine put on your land, then you would get a turbine lease. But we were fortunate enough that we have probably close to 80%, 85% of the land, of the people that own the land in our footprint are currently members and will enjoy the profits through their LLC ownership.
Mr. Chair, the ownership, they actually own the turbines, or is it another company that owns the turbines?
You've already answered that question.
Yeah.
Mr. Foles.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrup, the project company actually owns the turbines. We would get a lease from the people who own the land where the turbine is at. But it's the project company, the investors that are probably all, you know, within that 20 or 19, 20, section area.
So let me just drill on that issue. That's what I'm trying to... When you say project company, the project company is an LLC, and that is made up of landowners within the footprint? I mean, so it's those people that actually own the company that's doing the project.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And I think that answers my question for now.
Further questions? Seeing none, gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda is Maccabee. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Paula Maccabee, and I'm here representing Windustry. And Windustry is a nonprofit organization that was formed in the 1990s in order to help the development of community wind. And that's basically all that Windustry does is focuses on community wind, providing information, outreach, technical assistance. Windustry now gets about 1,500 hits on our website each day, and that's continually increasing. And these are people who are looking for information on community wind, and the average number of pages that people look at is about 12. We've got information on our website, things like how do you find out what your wind rights are, how do you create an agreement. But from our perspective, this is a very important bill, because this is a bill that helps address some of the most important issues facing community wind. First and foremost, what this bill does is removes the cap now, the tariff cap, is an artificial limit on pricing, and it really does prevent most of the utilities from being able to negotiate agreements that cover the costs of wind turbines. And since wind turbines are increasing in cost, approximately 60% over the last couple of years, it's important to do what this bill does, which is lift the price cap. The other thing that this bill begins to do is create an environment where there are market opportunities. An important piece of that is the sweet spot study, but also the good faith requirements for negotiation that are contained here, the change that Representative Peterson has put in so that utilities must negotiate and work with community energy. This doesn't artificially say that community energy is going to get a certain percentage of the market, but it opens up the market and allows those negotiations to take place. We strongly support this bill. There's some other provisions like the limit on the duration of easements and leases if a wind project isn't developed, which prevents other foreign corporations from coming in and tying up wind rights. We want to say also that we feel that this bill is a compromise. Windustry, there were a number of things that we wanted that would have made the situation less uncertain, whether it was a carve-out or a definite price. And the process that Mr. Crocker talked about, that Representative Peterson talked about, that Mr. Bull talked about, where all kinds of interests work together, is what has led to this bill. We think it's a good bill, and it is definitely a compromise where everybody had to come to the table. Speaking a little bit about the last testifier, I know there were a lot of questions from Mr. Gunther and Mr. Westrom that come to the heart of what we believe, and that's that community energy is about community, and it's about ownership. And what this bill has done is made that definition more clear so that there can be a determination by the Department of Commerce, but has stuck with the idea that what we're creating in Minnesota that's special and unique has to do with community in Minnesota and has to do with ownership. This bill doesn't in any way say that there aren't other good ways to have renewable energy. There are going to be independent corporate projects. There are going to be all kinds of partnerships. As a matter of fact, the bill encourages partnerships. But what this bill does is try to make sure that smaller, locally owned projects have their corner of the market too. And we feel that that's a very positive thing. It's a positive thing not only because of the economic benefits that Mr. Crocker talked about, and you have the article from Mr. Childegard, but also because that's how we develop a constituency that cares about renewable energy, is by letting people participate themselves, letting them become owners, letting them become stakeholders. Windustry is very grateful to all the folks who worked on this, not only Representative Peterson, but some of his constituents who put in huge numbers of hours, and the staff of both the House and the Department of Commerce who helped all of us try and find a meeting of minds. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
questions for Ms. McAbee? Seeing none, thank you. Mr. Wolf?
Hello, Mr. Chair, Committee. My name is Ryan Wolf, and I'm here to testify in support of this bill. My father, sister, and I developed a 5-turbine, 6.25-megawatt wind project, family wind project, in Representative Magnus's district in southwestern Minnesota there. And it's a family project with my father, my sister, my mother, my grandfather, and I having the revisionary interests in each of the towers on the Minnesota flip structure. And we started a development company to try to help replicate our project for other people in the community and throughout the state. And we've probably been doing that for almost a year and a half now. And our first project went online in the spring of 2006, so we're coming up on our one-year anniversary there with that. So just in the effort to keep it brief, I'll wrap that up or finish there and be happy to answer any questions that you would have.
Questions for Mr. Wolf? Representative Magnus.
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman.
Can't resist.
Representative and Mr. Wolf and his sister are very persistent, and they've toughed it out and gone through the hard times and the days when the sun was shining, the days it wasn't. And congratulations, Ryan, to getting your project going again.
Thank you.
Further questions? Mr. Wolf,
thank you.
Mr. Jewell. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Dan Jewell. I'm from Woodstock, Minnesota. And I'm here on behalf of the Seabed Organization, and I'm also a developer of community-based projects and have actively been involved and helped facilitate over 130 megawatts of community-owned projects throughout the state of Minnesota. And when I say I'm here representing the community-based organization, Seabed is an organization of a lot of people that are involved, that actually does this stuff. It's lawyers, bankers, construction guys, crane operators, developers, landowners, farmers, and small business people throughout the state of Minnesota. And we're here to speak in favor of this bill. This moves the ball a little bit further down the line. And it's been a lot of work done by a lot of people to get it to a compromise to where everybody seems to be in pretty good shape with it. And we think that this bill will help move the ball. And so we're here to speak in favor of the bill and hope that you all pass it. And I'd be happy to answer any of your questions.
Questions for Mr. Jewell, Representative Weston.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Jewell, or to the author, probably one or the other, there's a new section about local permitting of projects under 25 megawatts. Am I understanding that right? And what's that do different than current statute, and what will that mean to somebody developing a project, Mr. Jewell?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrom, basically the rules that were set up quite a few years ago, actually it was in the early 90s where we worked on the permitting process for wind power under Governor Carlson, and there was it said anything over 5 megawatts had to be permitted to the Environmental Quality Board, which is Minnesota Planning these days, and then anything under 5 megawatts would go through the county permit process. And through the evolution of community-based development, where we're doing 2-megawatt projects that are aggregated, where we have several farmers each owning a couple megawatts, the whole process got kind of fuzzy-wuzzy, was a bear. And so I think this is clarification language that says that if it's a community-based project, 25 megawatts or under, it should be permitted by the counties that the project goes in. And we've had discussion with this with the county commissioners and the Rural Minnesota Energy Board, and they're in favor of this process because the counties like to be able to have their hands around a community-based project and see that it's really and truly a community-based project.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Jewell,
Representative Western.
I think it answers my question. And basically, what currently is 5 megawatts or less will go up to 25 megawatts or less and get rid of the jurisdictional question if it's an aggregated project with separate owners. And up to 25 megawatts essentially is going to be at the county local level instead of at the state level.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Western, that's correct.
All right.
Where's that?
Further questions for Mr. Jewell? Seeing none, members told by Mr. Harris that Mr. Von Olin and Mr. Cummings, who are on the agenda, are not going to be able to make it here in time to testify this afternoon. I think it's commonly known at this point that our intention is recommending that this bill be passed to the General Register. It's also our intention to roll it into House File 436 when we take that up next week. And I've told Mr. Harris that we would welcome testimony at that time. The letter has been distributed that I think represents the views of the testifiers that were not able to be here today, and we will provide them an opportunity to testify next week. So with that, is there anyone here who would in the audience who would like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing no one, are there further questions or comments? Representative Peterson, would you like to renew your motion? Would you like to make any final remarks?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, that whole part about just making it for more than just wind, that didn't really get talked about much. So, I mean, clearly it's been for wind the last couple of years, but under the renewable energy standard, you know, there's going to be a lot of megawatts of renewable energy developed, hopefully across more technologies than just wind and across more of the geographic area of the state of Minnesota. So I see this as a tool also to help that development along. And, you know, there's opportunities for school districts in the state of Minnesota, the school boards, to have a piece of renewable energy in their mixes as well. And, you know, yes, it seems like we spent a lot of time on Southwest Minnesota today and in the planning that's going to go on, but hopefully as we move forward and evolve into a state that clearly, you know, prioritizes renewable energy, that we'll get off the Buffalo Ridge and start moving north, northeast, further east. We can sell all our power to those people in Ohio.
Representative Western.
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, getting back to the ownership part towards the beginning of the bill, and it's deleting no single qualifier owning more than two turbines. And I'm just wondering if maybe you or council could walk through the changes there in the 51% ownership, what that means, because it's, as I try to patch together what's being stricken and what's being left and added, I'm not quite clear on what that change does or doesn't do. You know what I'm talking?
I think so. To either Mr. Chair, to either Mr. Ehlich or Mr. Bull, I don't, whoever wants to answer.
Representative Western, we have Mr. Bull at the table. I think we'll answer that.
Mr. Bull.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, what we're proposing to do is to maintain the 51% as the benchmark. As you remember, the for projects of one or two turbines, there is no ownership restriction in terms of the amount of qualifying ownership. It can be owned by one or more folks. So the larger projects, though, there's a limitation. Qualifying owners can own no more than 15%
unless you're a public entity, like you're a city that wants to invest in a seabed project, they represent, you know, hundreds of folks. That sort of gets through that, I think, that hurdle. We also are looking at 51% of contract payouts. So under a power purchase agreement, how much is being paid to the project? So we want 51% of those dollars to flow to qualifying owners or surrounding community. 35% needs to go to qualifying owners. The additional monies can go to local units in terms of the production tax that's levied on these projects. Local lenders, the interest on local debt can count toward that 51%. Lease payments to the landowners, if they're not qualifying owners, there are other people are participating in the project. So we're looking at maybe giving a better clarification of what goes into that 51% and how the monies flow.
So Representative Western?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Bolt, so if I understand you correctly, you're saying the minimum threshold to the owners is 35%. You add the local taxes and maintenance contracts or perhaps things that might be people in the community, in the county, in the region, that part of the state, fixing it, maintaining it, doing other things. That needs to add up to 51%.
Mr. Chair.
Including the interest paid if it's a local bank, but if it's an out-of-state bank or a large national bank,
right,
that wouldn't count?
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, that's correct. And that's the way we've been implementing the statute, but we wanted to make it clearer in statute that that's the benchmark for folks. And I think we should all recognize that all of us who have worked with this statute over time, that it was a difficult, it was a difficult statute to work with. And we needed to make sure that it, as we begin to ramp up in the amount of community projects that we'll be seeing, we needed to get clarity, which is why we're here this year.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Bolt,
Western,
you talked about municipal can own now the entire seabed project. Is that a change, or is that current law?
Mr. Chair, Representative Western, that's a change, but it's a clarification. There's a limit. The reason there's a limitation in the law of no qualifying owner owns more than 15% is that we wanted to make sure that the benefits of the project are spread. And when it's a city that or a municipality or a school that owns it, the benefits of those of the project are, I think, by its nature, spread amongst those folks. So it was a reflection that that's already the case if a public entity owns it.
So, Mr. Chair, last question, I believe.
Senator Western.
Mr. Bolt, while I might disagree with you a little bit on that, just because the city runs it, citizens don't directly see it as an investment that they can own, but I hear what you're saying. Perhaps that should be limited to 50%, but that could also be the outcome the city could venture with other LLCs that qualify and do the project together. There's nothing that limits that either, is there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Western, there's language that encourages that.
I see. Good. All right. I think that answers questions for now, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Western. Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Peterson and Mr. Bull. Just one quick question. It kind of goes off of that same section. I want clarification on the 15%. So if we have an LLC, they are considered to be one qualifying owner, and that LLC can own no more than 15% ownership, correct?
Mr. Bull.
Mr. Chair, Representative Welty.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, one thing I wanted to, to mention is that the governor, after the bill passed in 2005, the governor in the November of 2005 set a goal of 800 megawatts of seabed projects by 2010. And to put that in context, we had about 800 megawatts of wind installed in the state. So he was looking at a big goal. And I wanted to commend the utilities to a large extent for their work on meeting that goal. We currently have about 500 megawatts of that towards that goal under contract or very close to under contract. And XL, GRE, SIMPA, MRES, MP, I don't want to leave anybody out, but there's been a good bit of activity. CHIMPA is the one I left out, Central Minnesota. The utilities have, these are harder projects for them to do. And it's hard on it takes a lot of commitment on the part of the community and the local owners, but it takes a commitment on the part of the utilities as well. And XL has done over 300 of that 500 megawatts. And it takes a commitment on their part in order to get the projects to the point where they can get under contract and be operational. So I wanted to publicly thank them for their work.
Thank you. Representative West.
Mr. Chair, sorry, and I think we'll be voting soon, so I'm not anticipating lengthy this year. But, Mr. Bolt, while you're there, how are we changing it to expand beyond seabed's ownership structure being intended for wind? I assume by expanding or allowing if a methane digester becomes a practical application or a small hydro dam or you name it, different types of baseload or intermittent energy opportunities come along. How exactly are we changing it to cover all of those? I wasn't able to quickly catch that.
Mr. Bull.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, that's exactly what we're doing. One of the co-ops, Dairyland Power Cooperative, wanted to get into, they're doing a lot of methane digester projects. They don't do a lot of wind in their service territory. They don't feel that they're the huge resource that they can call on there, but they do have a lot of cows. And so one of the things they were looking to do is they wanted to partner in seabed projects for methane digesters. And so that was one of the things. So we've changed, Representative Peterson has recommended changing the law, and we agree with that strongly, to reflect any of the eligible technologies that qualify for the renewable energy standard. So solar, biomass, small hydro. Yes, the list, solar.
Right. Thanks.
Representative Norris.
Mr. Chair and Representative Peterson, I believe. I just had a question. In Section 13 in the original bill, it called for a study, and then the word study is gone in the delete all. Maybe you covered that, maybe you didn't. Is there any cost, or what is the change there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nordison, it goes down into 1530. No analysis necessary. We're going out there to get the information that exists from other states and to put that into our planning for transmission into our state's desire to guide, you know, what other states have undertaken in their state transmission activities. That's what it does. So it's more of an evaluation.
Okay, thanks.
Further questions? So Representative Peterson, I would really like to congratulate you on a very satisfactory outcome from a long and arduous journey here. More remarkable in that you had to snap back from the RES work that you did earlier in the session to take on this as well, and I really commend your effort. Thank you very much for it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And while you were all talking about energy conservation and efficiency and global warming and stuff, I was trying to monopolize all of Mr. Eliff's time. And he's been very generous, and we should make note of that for the record that Mr. Eliff has been very helpful and a very wide open door, and I certainly appreciate that. And for the record, I was kidding about that Ohio part. We shouldn't just sell it to them. We should consume our own and maximize our own in Minnesota so we can have a 21st century energy policy that recognizes the contributions of communities and their importance across Minnesota.
Well, Representative Peterson, I think you have the opportunity here to set a record for this committee, which it would be possible to actually finish ahead of time. So would you like to renew your motion at this time?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members.
Actually, it would be as amended.
As amended. I'd like to renew the recommendation to pass as amended and refer to a Committee on Finance with a recommendation to place on the General Register.
All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion fails. Congratulations, Representative Peterson.
Chair? I think that demonstrates that threats and a good bill get things done quickly.
Members, we, as I said at the beginning of the meeting, we do not have any need to meet this evening. No, we haven't. The next meeting will be Friday afternoon, 12:30. That will take up a number of bills that we need to wrap up before the policy deadline. And next week we'll be taking up the finance bill on Monday and House File 436 on Wednesday. Representative Oz,
with regard to the finance bill on Monday, will there be time for us to review it for amendments, and or how is that going to work out?
I've spoken with Representative Westrum about that. We hope to have it possibly tomorrow, but certainly by Friday.
Super. Great.
With that, members, the meeting is adjourned.